Welcome to the Predictable Revenue Podcast, where frontline sales leaders teach you how to build and scale an outbound sales team. Welcome back to the Predictable Revenue Podcast. I'm your host, Colin Stewart. Today, I'm joined by another podcast host. We'll get to that in a sec. Ruben Swartz, welcome to the show. Thanks for coming on, Ruben.
Thanks for having me, Colin. Great to be here.
Yeah, thank you. So you're a man that does many things. One of those is a podcast called Sales for Nerds. The other one is sort of more relevant to what we're talking about today, which is, now I'll try and get this right, but Mimoram.
Mimoram, yes.
Mimoram. I knew I was going to, I keep wanting to say Mimoram because it just that stuck in my head the first time I read it, but Mimoram. So it's a proposal tool. And basically you've got some courses and we're going to talk about, you know, how not to do proposals wrong. And I've sent Ruben a copy of our proposal and he tore it apart pretty viciously, and we'll have some resources at the end. You can check out, he's got some links to some more content if you're curious. That said, thanks for joining us. I'm curious, where did all this come from? Why bother spending, all this effort to try and help people get better at proposals?
You know, it's funny. I was thinking about this morning because I was telling someone, hey, I'm going to be on the Predictable Revenue Podcast to talk about proposals. And if you could have made a statement about me 10 years ago that would be least likely to ever come true, that would have been up there. I'm not sure it would have been like number one, but it would have been close. Nothing that I ever planned was ever going to lead to this. I was a technical guy. I ended up starting a consulting firm because I wanted to do the technical work that I did, which meant that I had to write proposals, which meant, like a lot of people, I was really crappy at writing those proposals. I made a lot of horrendous mistakes. It took me over a decade, I feel like, to really kind of get the process down. And then for various reasons, I ended up creating software to automate the process, blah, 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 blah. And I ended up talking to other people who were writing proposals. And I never thought about helping them with the actual proposals. I was just trying to make things more efficient. I thought I was the only one who was this bad. And it turns out that I was not, that this is a pretty common problem. And I realized I was spending a lot of my time actually helping people, not so much with the technology, but with the actual process and content. How should people be thinking about this? And like a lot of folks, I was like, I don't know anything about this. I'm obviously an imposter. Surely this is just me and maybe a handful of people who happen to be attracted to this kind of madness. And it turns out that's actually not true, that for a lot of people, there is really no good training or background or just baseline context for how to do proposals. And so by default, people do the same thing that I did. We kind of copy the other bad habits that we see that are out there and wonder why it's such a painful process. And once I kind of got over the hump on that, I thought, gosh, this is so ridiculous. People waste so much time and energy, both buyers and sellers, so much extra stress. If we can get people doing this a little bit more effectively, everyone's going to be so much happier.
That's great. As you were sort of talking about that, I've been thinking back to, sort of my evolution as a salesperson. I spent probably 10 years in sales before I started my first company or this company. And I think to all the proposals that I've created, and there's no class in school that was like how to create a proposal, how not to say dumb stuff to your customers on paper when you tell them what your pricing is. And obviously you're not telling them what your pricing is, just with the proposal, but there was no course on this, unless you're in a company with a, fully staffed sales operations team, which I know, some listeners are. The rest of us are sort of left to just kind of make it up as we go, and I feel it like a pretty common, pretty common situation is, the sales ops team sets up, a proposal tool and, maybe some templates. And then, that's the sort of ideal to start with. And then us salespeople take over and just change things. And you look in your proposal or your template library and there's 400 different templates from your salespeople, and everybody's got a different way of doing things. And so it's, I've seen how, we sent ours to you for markup, and in looking back at it, I'm like, this is not what we started with. We had so much more in here, and it just sort of changed and evolved, and things got lost and things got cut out. And, it was probably changed one way for one customer. And then there's been no intentional evolution to it. It's just been, okay, I got to do a proposal. Let's see what we've got in the library. Let's go for it.
Right. Where did we have that thing about that situation? It was kind of like this last time. Hey, have you seen that? And so on. Absolutely. Yeah. And I mean, if you're starting with a sales ops team that's actually setting up a tool and templates for you, you're already ahead of a lot of people who are just literally like, let me grab some proposal that someone sent me and change the names and change the dates and so on.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. You know, if you already have a proposal tool in place, I feel like we're orders of magnitude, ahead of where we were before, just by being able to like point click, get a proposal out, in 5 minutes. But I feel like it's one of the areas that we've neglected, right? And so why don't we start with, we're going to get into what your proposals, what you feel like they should look like and what the ideal format is. But so before we do, can you talk to me about, some of the things you've done wrong in the past?
Well, how much time do we have, Colin? Because I mean, there's a lot of stuff that's going wrong here. And I don't know if this is going too far back, but I actually feel like some of this actually goes all the way back to high school, where I was one of those nerdy kids who was trying to get into college and all that. And the English teachers would basically grade your papers on how many SAT vocab words you could cram into your essays. So like, well, I could play that game. And I thought I sounded pretty smart and all that. And it was just terrible. And I got to college. I remember I had a professor who was actually trying to teach me to write properly, who just literally just covered everything with red ink. And at that point, it was literally red ink on a printed page. I was like, wow, by the time he transformed what I was doing, you could actually read what I wrote and understood what I meant. That's pretty cool. Mm-hmm. But then I got into the corporate world. I was a software guy. I wasn't really on the sales side, but I would get called in to help with the RFP responses on the real technical questions. And I had no idea what to do, of course, because no one ever trained me for this. So I would kind of look at the other parts of the RFP and see what people had written. And it was a lot like the high school habits, except instead of SAT words, it was like MBA words. And so, it was all about like synergistically leveraging cutting edge technology and blah, 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 blah. And it's kind of appalling. But at the same time, we were in these really big enterprise sales cycles, and we probably could have benefited from a tighter proposal, but these things were going to take a year no matter what. And so you could kind of get away with a lot of bad habits because there was so much handholding and so much face-to-face, and everything took so long. When I was trying to sell smaller projects for my firm, I didn't have that luxury, right? I needed to go close business and get cash coming in the door. And I didn't have the resources to go, fly a team of people out for 6 months and do discovery. I needed my proposals to actually be good. And unfortunately, I had all these bad habits. So I'd have these meetings and everything seemed great. They were really enthusiastic. And they'd say, hey, can you send me a proposal? And I'd of course say yes, because I was super excited. And then I'd go to write the proposal and I'd be terrified because I had no idea what to do. Right? Somehow putting in little blurbs in an RFP that someone else is ultimately responsible for is a lot easier than actually being responsible for the revenue yourself. Mm-hmm. Especially when you're trying to make payroll. But I kind of went back to those bad habits. I used a lot of those MBA words, and I would send these really confusing documents to people that I'd then have to explain to them. And I think part of it was just insecurity, right? I was not confident enough in myself just to explain things clearly. I was pretending to sound like I was Accenture or McKinsey or something like that, or what I thought those firms sounded like. And I think another thing that was problematic, which kind of goes back to basic sales stuff that you guys are working on with predictable revenue, is I would sort of learn of a symptom that I could help treat. And I'd be like, great, they're a fit. And it took me a while to figure out, well, they have a symptom, but what's the underlying disease? Is that a disease that I actually treat? Or is it just an inconvenience that they can take a vitamin for and it's going to go away next week? Mm-hmm. And even beyond that, it took a while for me to figure out that even if it's a disease that in theory I can treat, I need to understand why are they asking me to help them treat it versus somebody else, right? I was very much focused on the basic level of things like you have a problem, I'm going to solve your problem, but I didn't understand how the organization worked behind it. So the proposal I crafted was, if I got everything lined up right and the organization happened to be lined up exactly right, it would work fine. But 90% of the time, that's not the case. And I would run into a lot of trouble. Sometimes I'd manage to push the ball over the goal line, but just a lot later than I expected. And sometimes things that I thought were in the bag would just go sideways and I didn't understand why.
So what was the turning point for you? What sort of made you realize, hey, I'm doing this wrong. I need to do something different.
There were a couple of things that happened on different ends of my life. And the one that's sort of most directly relevant is I learned that you don't commit to a proposal until you've got a time to present it and go through it. If someone's not going to put that on their calendar, forget about it. And I was doing this and it was clear that they had tried to read my proposal and it was confusing them. And we were going through it and they were asking questions. And of course I wanted to be like, well, why don't you get it? But as they were asking questions and I was looking at the document in front of me, I was like, gosh, yeah, these are really reasonable questions. This is a crappy document. Of course they have these questions. Why would I write it like this? And then they would ask a question, I would explain it, and they'd be like, oh, okay, yeah, that makes sense. And I was thinking in my head, well, why didn't I just write it that way? That mm-hmm. would have been a whole lot easier for people. And in my head, I'm also kind of turning around and thinking about experiences where I've been the buyer and someone else is trying to sell something to me, and the difference between a good buying experience and a bad buying experience, right? Because we all want to buy, we just don't like being sold. And so many experiences I've had in the technology world, or even just going to a car dealership, and people are kind of assailing you with what they think is awesome about their stuff. And you're just trying to like protect yourself from the onslaught of features and benefits and reasons you need to buy today and so on. You're like, this is not actually solving my problem. Versus when you have a good buying experience where somebody figures out what you're actually trying to do and helps you actually solve your problem. I remember being at a car dealership, my wife and I were trying to get a new car, and this lady spent about 10 minutes going through specs of some vehicle that, of course, you could grab on the internet. And then she kind of gets done and catches her breath, and we're just looking at each other like, what just happened? She says, so what are you looking for in a car? And I'm like, that would have been a really great place to start the conversation, right? But I realized that I was doing the same thing to my prospects. As much as I thought I was being quote unquote customer centric, I really wasn't. And so part of it was realizing that I was making things unnecessarily complicated. I was doing a lot of things that I hated when people did to me. And I wasn't even doing it out of malice. I was just kind of doing it out of ignorance and insecurity. And I thought, well, if I was working with a friend on this problem, how would I interact with them, right? Would I use all these bozo jargon words? Or would I just explain what was going on and what we should do and how it should work and so on? And so that was really, that set of experiences helped me figure out, I'm making this hard in my own head. My own head trash is getting in the way and it's making me more stressed out. It's making it harder to actually close deals. It's making me lose deals that I should win. This is ridiculous. Why am I doing it this way?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's so easy to just to fall into those traps. You know, you just sort of throw some word salad onto the page and then send it off. And you're not thinking about, you know, what the buying experience is like. Because it sounds like your proposals were adding at least a week, you know, to your sales cycle.
Well, if I was lucky, right? If it was only one iteration of fixing the crap and getting back. But I was dealing with these busy executives and half the time, whatever the follow-up meeting was would get rescheduled and so on. And there were a bunch of deals that just went sideways because I didn't just lay it out really clearly for them. It was so silly. Mm-hmm.
So this is the turning point. So what did you notice was the sort of the big shift that took place in your head?
Well, I think it was in my head, I always thought I was putting the customer first, right? I wasn't trying to be malicious. I wasn't trying to screw anybody over or anything like that. If anything, I was too self-aware about not being too salesy, but I was still in very much in my own head. And I realized I had to get out of my own head and get into the customer's head. The same way I want a salesperson to really be my assistant when I'm buying, as opposed to someone selling me and making quota, mm-hmm. or just sort of working orthogonally to my interests, I have to do that for the buyer. And so I realized, let me turn this whole thing around and let me look at my proposals. And you can think of it as you can take a highlighter pen and kind of put in green the stuff that's about the prospect, put in yellow the stuff that's about both of you, and put in red the stuff that's about you. Right? And my proposals were like 90% red and 5% yellow and 5% green. And I was like, this, I'm not exactly sure, but I think it should be the opposite. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, and we were talking before about sort of the, you know, who's the hero of the story.
Right. Right. And I think that's really important. I think even before that, just the notion that the proposal is a story, not a brochure, is really important. Mm-hmm. So many proposals are like a catalog where people have taken a cover page and they've torn out a couple pages from their offerings and they stick it in there. And there's a whole bunch of crap that's like, hey, look at this. It's awesome. It's like a Williams-Sonoma holiday catalog. Won't people love this? But mm-hmm. It has nothing to do with what the buyer actually cares about.
Yep. So, all right. So we understand the pain. We feel like, you know, I feel like I'm thinking about my proposal and it's probably all red. You know, maybe there's a little green in there.
There's a little green in there.
Not much. Not much.
Nope.
So then I get that. I understand that I need to do something. So walk me through, what does your process look like?
Sure. I guess it is funny because we should really have you guys talking about the importance of leading up to the proposal. Because I feel like what happens in a lot of situations, and certainly what happened with me, is I didn't run the sales cycle very well. And so I would just stumble into a situation where somebody said, can you send me a proposal? And then I was up the creek without a paddle because I wasn't prepared. Mm-hmm. And really, the essential thing is you got to do 95% of the work before someone says, can you send me a proposal? And if you do that right, then the proposal is easy. But if you don't do the sales cycle right, there's no magic that can, you know, crystal ball it into a brilliant proposal.
Totally. And I feel like us as a team, we were taking that approach of, okay, we feel like we've got our sales process. I wouldn't say dialed in, but you know, we're pretty confident in, we've got a strong process. And so the proposal should just be, you know, we've already talked about all this stuff. It's just something that if they need to send it around to somebody else, or if they, right. if they want to review, you know, what happened, or, you know, some of the things that we talked about, here's just sort of a summary or a recap, but we weren't thinking about, I think the thing that we were ignoring is that most of these people, they download it to a PDF and they send it around, or they forward it around to the other people in their organization. Right. And in that case, it's like ripping out a couple pages from an encyclopedia about our company.
Right.
Handing it to somebody. It's like, you can learn a little bit from the encyclopedia, but you know, there's no context there, right? There's no why. There's no, you know, where did all this come from?
I think that's a great point, because I fell into this trap again and again as well. I had a great rapport with the project sponsor, whoever it was I was dealing with. And then the proposal would get circulated and people were like, I have no idea what this is all about or why I should care, but it looks like it costs money and it's going to cost me time and trouble. Why do I want to deal with this, right? Like, I have enough on my plate. Didn't speak to them at all. And it's easy these days for somebody to find a way to shut down a project, even if it should make a lot of sense.
So yes, I'm thinking about all the times, but yeah, we've done that. So talk to me about what does it look like on your actual doc? Let's get into some of the meat and bones here. So where do you start in a proposal? And what's the goal? Where do you start? What are you building towards?
Sure. And there's a bunch of questions there, and I'll try to remember all of them. You may have to refresh me on that. Sure.
Why don't we just start with, like, walk us through, just give us a brief overview of the process of like where you start and where you finish.
Yeah.
And then we can go in sort of piece by piece.
Sure. And I think one of the other things that I didn't understand very well at the beginning, kind of coming from that academic background, I thought I was supposed to take a bunch of information from the sales cycle, go off and synthesize something brilliant that was going to wow people, and then they'd want to hire me. And right, because you don't collaborate with your professor on your papers when you're in school. You go off and do the work and you're supposed to impress people. And so it took me a while to figure out that I wasn't supposed to go and win the deal by coming up with some novel solution that they had never considered. Proposals don't win deals, they lose them. And that took me forever to figure out, and took a bunch of lost deals to figure out. There are a bunch of things that I should have won, but because I was so busy being egocentric, I lost the actual goal of the prospect, and they didn't want to work with me anymore. They're like, well, we had such a great conversation. I don't understand where this proposal came from. And I'm like, oh gosh, what an idiot, right?
Yeah.
So let's think about that as the goal is not to win the deal. It's just to summarize a set of conversations that we've already had so that we can set up a really successful project. And having that, I think, just as a mindset shift, is really helpful. right? I'm not trying to do something magical with this document that it really can't do. That's going to cause me a ton of stress if I try to make it do that. And it also means that the way I approach it is going to be different. The questions I ask are different because I'm trying to get to the end goal of the project, not just closing the proposal. So what does that mean for the buyer, right? If the proposal is a story, not a brochure, and the hero of the story is the buyer, then what does their journey look like? And so for me, it starts with, well, what's actually going on? Why are they in this situation? You can almost think of this like a movie, right? We're going to set up the action with some kind of scene. And a lot of times people have all this background about their company history, the buyer's company history, et cetera, all the stuff that's completely extraneous to the actual story that everyone kind of already knows. It's like, well, why are we here? What's important? What's at stake, right? Like the hero and the heroine are battling, and if they don't save the artifact, the aliens will blow up the earth or something, right? Hopefully your proposal isn't quite that high stakes, but there's some reason that they're going to all this trouble. And a lot of times when you end up with a losing deal or a no decision, it's because you didn't really understand that either the stakes weren't that high to begin with, or you missed what the real stakes were. And so I feel like getting that situation summary down right is really important. And if you don't do that, the rest of the proposal isn't going to flow very well. If you do that, then it all kind of flows because the rest of the proposal is about resolving the tension that's set up in the situation summary. Make sense so far?
Yep. Yeah, I follow you. So essentially, we're doing a recap of sort of our discovery. This is the why are we here? And it sort of sets up the rest of the journey.
Exactly.
But it's not, people are going to die if you don't sign this proposal.
Well, I mean, it depends on what's actually going on. But hopefully for most of us, that's not the stakes involved.
Yeah.
But there's some real stakes. And kind of going back to what we were saying earlier, you don't want to just have here are kind of the technical symptoms or even the business symptoms. There's some often deeper life symptoms involved that are causing people to say, okay, I'm willing to make this change. I'm willing to take this risk. I'm willing to do something different than what I was doing. And if you don't understand what that is, there's a good chance that even though you can check the boxes, you're not actually going to get the deal. There's this notion that we like to think we're rational creatures, but really even the rationality in our brain is really good at just sort of justifying our gut after the gut decides what it's going to do. And so I'm not trying to suggest that people should manipulate anybody. I'm just trying to say we have to understand what's really driving people's decisions so that we can actually help them. Or if we can't help them, we can figure that out early before we write a proposal and waste a bunch of time.
Mm-hmm. Perfect. So we've got the sort of why are we in the situation? When do we get to talk about us? Because that's what all us salespeople want to do.
Yeah. So I like to show this little image from the original Star Wars movie where Luke meets Obi-Wan for the first time, and R2-D2 and C-3PO are there. And it's like, who's the hero of this story and who are we? And as a technology guy, I always wanted to make the technology kind of the hero, or maybe I wanted to play the hero. But really the key thing is we are the old man who's just there to help. We're going to have a couple lines of dialogue and do something critical without which the story cannot proceed, but we're really not the hero. And so the general rule I have is it should be as little about you as possible, but that doesn't mean that you're absent, right? There's areas where they're asking for your help and you have to be there to help them and show that you are doing the work that they want you to do so that they can achieve the goal that they want to achieve. And a lot of that's going to depend on the situation summary, right? What are they expecting you to actually do? Because you can describe a solution to two different companies and one of them is going to say, yeah, that's exactly what we need. And someone else might say, no, that's totally not what we need. Even though it's the same thing, they just think of it slightly differently. So instead of just taking like a page from our catalog or our encyclopedia and saying, we're going to give you a bunch of widgets or we're going to sell you the widget installation service, we want to know from the situation summary, what is it they're looking for, right? Maybe they're looking for a widget installation service, or maybe they're looking for some other benefit that we're going to basically translate into our widget installation service, but we want to speak in their language. And this is something, if I can pick on you a little bit, you know, when we look at your proposal, it starts off with, boom, here's a bunch of pricing information. And then there's, boom, here's the things that we're going to do, which is kind of like a repeat of the pricing information, but not exactly. And one of the things that's hard that I did constantly is we want to make it easy for the buyer by keeping everything consistent from the situation summary to the solution to the pricing. So they can say, okay, like, oh yeah, here's my problem. I can see how this thing fixes it and I can see what I'm paying for it. Okay, that's great. I don't have to do a whole bunch of mental puzzling to figure out how you are stitching this together for me. Mm-hmm. That's our job on the sales side to make it easy for them.
Yeah, I think we just sort of, you know, we were thinking, hey, we've got the sales process sort of buttoned down a little bit. You know, this document is just a summary and everybody just wants to see the pricing and sort of what's included. And we're making the cardinal mistake of just throwing the pricing up first and not explaining the value that pricing, you know, that we're going to create. Right. And I feel like as soon as I saw it without any of your notes, I was like, oh, I know what we're doing here. I can't believe we're doing this. I'm like, I would shoot one of our salespeople if they actually did this on a call. But, and we talk about that all the time in sort of value first and then deliver the price. And then we do the exact same thing, but on paper, you know, right, in the proposal.
And I mean, not a unique mistake, certainly. And I think one of the things that's hard is you actually mentioned how ROI for your customers is your first priority. And I highlighted that as, hey, this is about the customer. This is great. Let's expand on this some more, except it's kind of buried deep in there after they've had to go through the pricing. And then there's some other stuff where it's like, you're kind of explaining the pricing, but some of the terms don't line up exactly. Mm-hmm. And so if I'm looking at this, especially as one of those people who maybe is part of the committee, but not the original sponsor, I'm like, hold on a second. They said we were getting this, but over here, it doesn't say that. It says something that's a little different. What does that mean? Right? It just kind of puts a bunch of friction in people's minds and in the sales process.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like somebody stood up and rambled about the sales, about like what's included. And then somebody else was rambling about the pricing sheet. And you're like, there's no congruency here.
Right. Exactly. And so generally, it's weird because I say a proposal is a story, not a brochure. Usually when we read a story, we want to have a whole bunch of suspense and interesting twists and surprise endings and so on. With a proposal, we don't want any surprises. It's just a summation of what we've already talked about so that we all know that we're on the same page. There isn't like the Kaiser Soze reveal or anything like that that's going to impress people.
Yeah. Nobody walking away with a limp at the end.
Right. Hopefully not.
Yeah. So talk to me about pricing then. So where does it fit in and what's the right way to deliver pricing in a proposal?
Sure. And this is a very complicated conversation even unto itself. It's kind of like you can talk as much about pricing, I think, as the whole rest of the proposal combined. And it certainly causes a lot of stress for both buyers and sellers. So let me give some guidelines because there isn't a single hard and fast rule. But I think the first thing is we want to set up the value and the stakes before we present the pricing, right? We want to anchor people's minds to here's the problem we're trying to solve, right? It's $1 million problem. It's $100 million problem, whatever it is. And then here's the investment that we need to make to go tackle that problem, which is much smaller and more reasonable looking compared to what we're actually going to go get as a benefit. If we just throw a price out, well, naturally, price is going to seem expensive if it doesn't have value in context. So the situation summary, the solution, and then the pricing. So it's like we've set these really high stakes. The aliens are invading the Earth. Oh my goodness, here's all the cool stuff we're going to do to avoid that terrible fate. And here's the investment we need to make that happen. And then when it comes to the actual pricing details, there's a lot of different things that we can do. Sometimes price might be a simple number, right? Here it is, boom. Sometimes it's more like almost like a bill of materials or a bill of services with a lot of details and different line items. That stuff's going to depend on the situation that you're in. My general view is you want to give people as little pricing information as they need, but no less, right? You don't want to look like you're obscuring things, and you don't want to give people extra cognitive load that they don't actually need. Like I have a customer who bills for workshops and there's just a price. There isn't a breakdown for travel and hotel. And if you do the, you know, if you add books and so on, it's just a number. And that works great. There are other places where people are saying, I'm actually buying software, I'm buying widgets, I'm buying installation, and everything has to be spec'd out to great detail. Otherwise, people can't buy. That's going to depend on your particular sales cycle and what the person's looking for. And the easiest thing to do if you're in doubt, which is hard sometimes, is just ask, right? What do you want to see? What's useful for you? Mm-hmm. And I think the key thing is, if you are telling the right story, the value is going to look appropriate. A lot of times when people say, gosh, I'm getting all these pricing complaints, they just want the lowest price vendor. That's true if you're a commodity. And people say, well, we're not a commodity. We're great. We're value added, blah, 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 blah. Well, does that come across in your proposal? And a lot of times it doesn't, because you're using all these crazy words and no one can really understand what you're doing. And so they can't differentiate easily between you and the competition. The one thing they can look at that's easy to compare is the price. And so either you're in a commodity market, which is possible, or you're not explaining the differential value. And what I've seen is that people who are going through this process that I'm describing, who used to say, gosh, they only care about the lowest price provider, you can't make any margin in this business, et cetera, suddenly they start actually solving the customer's real problems, and they're competing with a bunch of people who don't differentiate and don't see the customer's real problems. And lo and behold, there's a whole lot less pricing pressure.
Surprise, surprise.
Right.
Yeah. Because I think you're right. It comes down to, if you're, you know, if you're just providing or selling widgets, then it's widget A versus widget B, which is the cheapest, right? But if you're positioning your process or your product or your solution as, you know, this widget, it's not about the widget. It's about what it helps you solve, right? It's about the business value. That's when you can start to get into sort of leveraging or like showing the importance of certain things that you do, right? Here's the way we're different, and here's why that differentiator is awesome. And here's why you need it, because it's going to help you solve X, Y, and Z problem, as opposed to you need widget A and I'll sell you widget A for $8 or $8 million.
That's exactly right. And I think one of the things that we need to keep in mind that I certainly didn't do, I thought I was doing that when I started writing proposals. Here's all the ways that we're awesomely differentiated and why you should pay and why you should use us and so on. Except it was all my nonsense, mm-hmm. right? Stuff that I thought was important that may or may not actually be important to the prospect. And it was funny, I was actually doing a workshop for a company and I was having breakfast with their VP of pricing. He was responsible for approving all the proposals. And his team was actually flying into this workshop. And so they were all in the air. And so all the phone calls from the sales team were coming to him. And I was sitting there eating and having a great time. And he was all stressed out. And then he finally had this light bulb go off. And he's like, wait a second, I hired you to help me with this problem. What should we do? We've got this thing going on where you know, we're 10% more expensive. And they say they want to go with us, but you know, they really don't want to pay for the extra 10% and they don't value X, Y, and Z. That's so super awesome. And I was like, well, okay, should they value X, Y, and Z? Or are they just missing something? And they're like, no, it doesn't really apply to them. And I'm like, well, can we just take out X, Y, and Z from their proposal? And he was like, yeah, we can totally do that. We don't really do that, but there's no reason we can't. And so they gave him the 10% price cut, but actually saved more than 10% on their cost by getting rid of things that the customer didn't care about at all. Hmm. And so it kind of goes back to what happens in the sales cycle, right? The story is about the buyer, and we can't just assume that all of the great stuff that we're doing is what the buyer cares about. Now, hopefully if we've got good product market fit, we're doing a good job with our predictable revenue marketing activities, we're going to attract people who are closer to valuing what we actually do than not, but it's still about figuring out what do they actually care about, right? It's like, what are you looking for in a car? Let's talk about that and not the 120 different features, 99 of which are completely irrelevant to you.
Mm-hmm. It comes down to having a really strong sales process and sort of pre-proposal, you're setting that up, and then post-proposal, you're making sure that you've got next steps booked. But I think that it's that pre-proposal process that really gives you the ability to write a great proposal.
Absolutely. And to tell you whether you should even be committing to a proposal, mm-hmm. right? A lot of people will, you know, the buyer doesn't necessarily want to be impolite. So they ask for a proposal because they don't want to just blow you off, which is, you know, kind of a pain in the neck. But if you don't have a good story, you don't have to write a proposal. You just say, I don't think this is a good fit. I don't understand what we're doing here.
Perfect. And so we've got, you know, the, in terms of proposal, we have, you know, we've laid out why we're in this situation. We've talked about the solution and what it does. We've delivered the pricing, you know, this is what it's going to cost you to solve this problem. What else do we need to include in the in this proposal?
Sure. Well, I like to make sure that everything that we need to get started is in one simple place. So have some basic terms and conditions or legalese in there. Doesn't have to be a lot. In the template that I'll link to in the show notes, there's like half a page of terms and conditions. Some people might have more, some people might have less. But the idea here is, hey, there are some legal things that we have to make sure we've dotted our I's and crossed our T's and so on. But it doesn't have to be ridiculous. It should be human readable. It doesn't have to slow down the sales cycle because it's going to get referred to a lawyer. I've certainly made that mistake before, right? Lo and behold, their lawyers come back with a bunch of stuff. Even if there isn't really anything there, they have to justify that they just charged hundreds or thousands of dollars to mark up this document. So they have to find something. And then you're wondering, oh gosh, these things they changed. I got to go back to my, it's a mess. Since I moved to this real simple, very fair, very transparent terms and conditions, I haven't had any lawyer markup. People read it, they go, yep, that's cool. Sometimes there might be a little tweak here and there, but it's nothing that requires legal review. It just makes things easier. And it also helps, I think, put the buyer at ease. They don't want to get sold. They want to buy. They're trying to solve their problem. They're busy just like you are, right? Let's make it as easy as possible to get through the proposal, which is really just setting up the real work, right? So then once we've got the legal terms and conditions there, just say, how do we get started, right? Get started by signing here and sending a check to so-and-so or whatever the next steps are. Let's make it real clear what should happen so that the momentum can keep going. If you're using a tool like your PandaDoc or Mimarin or whatever, you can do that all electronically. Regardless, just make it real easy. And then the one place I like to have a little bit of red, a little bit about us, is to have a human bio there at the end of the proposal. Like you're buying from a person who is not a LinkedIn profile, who's not a resume, who's not a corporate about us page. They're an actual human being. And you don't have to get too cutesy with it. But just so they know who you are, especially when they circulate this to their peers. Right, hey, this guy Colin, yeah, he seemed real sharp, but he's also a human being who plays hockey and does all this cool stuff, someone that we can relate to as an individual. And if you're doing this online, you can even do this as a little embedded video if you want to. Don't have to, but you know, get rid of all the corporate MBA marketing speak, like I've got 50 plus years of cutting edge experience with blah, 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 blah. Right? You'd sound like a doofus. And I know because I wrote all that stuff. I didn't have 50 plus years of experience. But you get the idea, right? Like I was trying to sound like the opposite of a person, which was a really bad idea.
Combined with the 75 interns we have over 50 years experience in the field. Right. Perfect. So if I can recap the process, it's step one, make sure you have a really strong sales process leading up to it. So you're gathering the information that you need pre-proposal. And step 1A is really making sure we have a next step book to review the proposal. Because in my opinion, if you have an opportunity and there are no next steps booked, it's not a real opportunity, right?
Absolutely.
If there's nothing on the calendar and the person hasn't accepted it, it's fantasy. It's not fiction.
Yeah, and I think it's great when you're sitting in that meeting and they say, can you send me a proposal? First of all, you have to know, do you have a great story or not? Because it's entirely possible that you don't. And it's okay to say, you know, I'd love to, but I feel like we're missing a couple things. Can you help me out here? Or even if you say yes, and then you go to write it and you realize you missed some things, you can always call up and say, hey, I got so excited about working with you guys, but I've got a couple of questions. And then when you're in that meeting, say, let's put something on the calendar for when we're going to go through this. And hopefully they're like, great. And they pull out their calendar and you set it up and then you're good. Right. And if they hem and haw and act like that's a big ask, then you say, okay, well, when you're ready to take that next step, let's revisit and we can talk about putting a proposal together. There's no point in doing all this work and having all this stress before you do it. And this was something that I did a bunch, and I know It's a common problem. I don't understand. It's so obvious once you know it, but it's like whenever someone asks me for a proposal, like that night I'd be up till midnight writing the proposal. And then I'd wonder why I didn't hear anything for 2 weeks, right? Because they weren't ready for the proposal yet. And I just hadn't asked, when do you want this by, right? When are you going to be ready to review this? You don't necessarily have to move at breakneck speed if they're just going to be telling you to hurry up and wait.
Exactly. And I think it's, I think having this as part of your process is a great temperature check. Because if they're saying, no, no, I don't want to book a next step, just send me a proposal. You know, there's probably not a good chance that you're going to get that deal.
Right.
Right. Like if they don't want to talk to you anymore, that's the end of it. Right.
Yeah. So
you may as well save yourself some time. And especially if you're putting, you know, effort into these proposals, you know, the best thing that you can do is lose a deal early. And especially before you've done, you've invested a ton of work. And just to your point, if they're not ready for a proposal, if it's too early, then don't waste your time sending them something they don't want.
Right. And I think kind of going back to the whole predictable revenue thing, a lot of times people will say, gosh, my pipeline's looking a little skimpy, but now look, I've got this $100,000 deal in the proposal stage. Mm-hmm. And so it looks like they have a real pipeline, but they don't.
Yep. Had that conversation. I've done that myself. Had that conversation a bunch of times. It's like, you've got a big pipeline, but none of this is real. This is all fantasy. Perfect. So have a strong process, make sure there's next steps booked. Step two, make the buyer the hero of the story, you know, and remember that the proposal is a story. It's not a brochure. The next step is starting with a strong summary. You know, here's why we're in this situation. So you're pulling from your pre-proposal process, that sales process to really create the tension, so to speak, tension in the story, right?
Right.
And then the next step is, you know, tell the story of how we're going to solve that problem. So this is how we're going to resolve that tension. So you create it, you resolve it. Then once they've sort of resolved that, it's like, okay, and they've made the decision, tell them how they can get started, what happens next. And then finally, make it personal.
That's great. I think that's better than I could say it myself.
Perfect. And I love your tip. Proposals don't win deals, but they can lose them.
Sad, but true.
Something to never forget here. Yeah, love it. I want to jump to, we do a special surprise segment that I want to finish with here, because I think we're probably 45, 50 minutes in. And, you know, I always like to give the guests a chance to sort of, to share, you know, I want to return the favor. You come on here. This has been some great content. I always like to give you a chance to sort of promote your products. But, you know, this being a sales podcast, we can't make it easy on you.
Okay.
Right. So we'll do a cold call role play if you want.
Okay.
So here's your chance. What do you want to pitch or promote?
Well, I guess, you know, there's a couple things that I work on, but probably the most relevant thing to people in this audience would be, I actually have an online course that relates to how to do proposals, which kind of takes some of the stuff we've talked about and dives into much deeper detail.
Okay. So here's your chance. You can cold call me. We're going to throw a minute on the board. I'm not actually going to, but maybe okay, timer check. You ready?
No, okay. I'm terrible at outbound, but let's do it anyway.
This is awesome. I'll throw some objections at you. Just handle those objections and keep pushing, keep pushing.
All right,
ring, ring. Hey, this is Colin.
Hey, Colin, one of your competitors circulated one of your proposals to me, and I have a feeling you're leaving a ton of money on the table.
That sounds interesting. How'd you get my proposal, you thief?
Well, that's a great question. Let's just say that somebody was looking at hiring you guys and they just couldn't figure out what you were selling them. And they said, Ruben, can you make heads or tails of this? And I looked at it and I had to admit that I was a little bit confused. And I thought, well, maybe there's a way to actually streamline this so that those people would have just bought from you in the first place.
You know, we've got a really high close rate on our proposals. We don't need any help.
Fantastic. Mind if I ask what your close rate is?
90%.
That's awesome. I would say you probably don't need any help, but how did this one get away?
1 in 10, I guess.
Okay, very good. If you're closing 90% of your proposals, you probably need to send out a few more. I mean, I'm all for high close rates, but that's that might be a little bit too high. People might be a little gun shy with the sales process.
Possibly, yeah. And maybe I've got my, you know, maybe my math isn't totally perfect there. So it's really high though.
It's really high. Well, that's pretty good. I mean, I think it's useful if you, I lost my minute, huh?
Oh yeah. Minutes up. I don't know. To the listeners, let me know, how do you think Ruben did? What do you think he could have improved? And, where do you think I should have taken that meeting? Did he get to the value? I think it was a really strong start. Always great if you can open it up with, I've got a copy of your proposal and it sucks. I think you're leaving money on the table.
Yeah, that's, I didn't know what to do. I'm very bad at outbound sales. I should probably hire, do you know of any kind of predictable revenue team that could shoot me a proposal that would help me with that?
I think we did shoot your proposal and it was terrible. You just chewed it up.
It was not terrible. So first of all, I will say that it was typical, which, but here's the nice thing, right? We're talking about all these things about what your proposal should look like. And sometimes it's really hard to actually get everything right, but you don't have to have everything perfect to really stand out from the crowd, because the typical proposal is pretty terrible, right? You don't necessarily have to be perfect. You just have to be a lot better than your competition, which is often not too hard.
Perfect, Ruben. I think that's a great spot to leave it. Thank you so much for coming on the show. If people want to check out Memoram or Sales for Nerds, there's a link in the, we'll put a link in the bottom of the show notes here that you can check out. It's got a link to your course, Memoram, and a couple of podcasts. You've actually had Aaron Ross on your show.
Absolutely. And my podcast, we drink wine, but it was too early in California for Aaron. So he had to do the wine for both of us. But yeah, there'll be a link to that up there. There'll be a little coupon code for the course, just as a thank you for predictable revenue listeners. And awesome. Thanks, Colin. Thanks for having me.
Thanks again, Ruben. See ya.